The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
And hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you. It's Friday, June the 26th, and we're now already in progress in the second round of the third stop, if you will, on the shortened PGA Tour. That's a long intro, isn't it? PGA Tour season, as the players have now gone up the East Coast from South Carolina and now playing at the Travelers Championship in Cromwell, Connecticut. And that's where they've all gone, still without fans, still very limited as far as the number of people that are there, volunteers and just essential people, if you will, that are playing. And congratulations to Mackenzie Hughes, because he was within one final putt on his final hole of getting into that exclusive 59 club, but he had to settle for a first round 60. So he has a nice little 3-shot lead over Rory McIlroy, Victor Hovland, and Xander Schauffele going into today's second round. So a lot of great, great scoring happening there, and they expect it to continue as that the second, third, and final rounds continue at the Travelers Championship. Frank Bassett, as always, in the Nashville studios, joining us. Frank, it was kind of like guys literally throwing darts at a dartboard yesterday, wasn't it?
It was crazy. The scores were low. There was some great play. It was, you know, that's what people want to see. They want to see excitement. They want to see birdies. So, yeah, it was. You know, talking about backing up onto Mackenzie Hughes for a minute and that 60, they need to stop this 59 watch stuff. Why? Because? Why 59 watch? There's a 58 that's been carded. Let's look at Furyk in a 58. So let's look at a 58 watch.
At that same course, by the way.
I
mean, Hughes actually made a little bit of a joke. He said, I wasn't that excited the last couple of holes when obviously 59 was in play, because he goes, it still wouldn't have been the course or the tournament record. He goes, you know, Furyk 58 wasn't really in my head. So he said it's kind of odd that a 59 would have been like, oh, really? 59? That's all?
Okay, that's it.
Couldn't get your 57, 58?
Yeah.
So, guys are really – and if you look at the scores of all the different players, from guys at 10-under, which is Hughes, all the way to 7 and 6s and 5-unders, there were so many 30s and 31s and 32s on different 9s that guys were shooting all over the place. He shot actually 31-29, nice little 18 holes. But even for other guys, Jordan Spieth opened with a 31, and then he kind of did what he does and shoots a 36 on the back 9 and had an okay round, but not as good as it could have been. But –
a
lot of really good nines.
back.
Yeah, after
the first day.
You're like,
all right, great, beautiful.
Seven down.
Yeah, so he's on the cut line, basically.
Yeah, I mean and you got to look at see exactly where Mackenzie's going to be today. That's the tough thing about this, Frank, on the tours we've talked about, and we all know it's not just a good round, because almost anybody that tees it up on any given Thursday can put up a 60, 61, 62. It's what do you do on Thursday and Friday? And so that's how you win tournaments. That's how you become big on the tour and, you know, stay on the tour for a while. Mackenzie Hughes isn't as big a name and has been one of those guys that can play well at times, certainly, but other times it fades away. So we'll see how it goes for four full rounds, assuming he makes four full rounds. It brings up our friend Paul Stankowski, who he said started one tournament several years ago when he was on tour, 61-77 was his Thursday Friday score. So he's like, there's no guarantees you're going to make it to the weekend.
Yeah, so that's losing focus.
61-77
Or losing something. That's losing a lot is what it is.
Yeah. Losing brain cells. Man, I can't imagine. And he even says, we've talked to him about it, he goes, I didn't think I played that badly. He goes, you know, the second day, I shot a 77. He goes, I couldn't really tell. Nothing felt different or out of whack or anything else. He goes, putts just weren't dropping. Shots were, you know, 20 feet away instead of 10 feet. I just wasn't making. But it happens. But
that's a big,
but still,
big 60, swing.
61-77. Yeah, I could do that.
That's a big swing.
I could easily swing that one. So, hey, by the way, there's also, you know, talk about the U.S. Open is coming around. We've got, some really, really exciting things happening on the PGA Tour. Whether or not there'll be fans permitted coming up down the road with new tournaments, they're going to Detroit next week, next stop on the tour.
No fans.
And the commissioner talked about that a little bit. Of is there a number of guys that have tested positive for COVID-19? Is there a number that would make you change the protocol or not have tournaments or rethink whether you're going to have fans or not have fans? And he said, not really. He said, it's not like, you know, if we test 20 positive, we're going to change things up. And even as it's gone so far, they've tested, and these are round numbers, 3,300 people, and that's caddies and officials and players and everything. And so far, 7 have tested positive. And as he pointed out, it's a very low 0.25%. He said, so yes, we've had some positives, and that's kind of what everybody seems to focus on in any sport is one positive, but there's a lot of others that haven't tested positive. So he said it's not panic time, but you know, he wants to be on top of it and he wants to be cautious about it too.
They're doing a great job. I mean, the PGA Tour is doing a fabulous job of you know, testing and monitoring, and then, you know, their contingency plan for containment. So they're doing good. They're doing as well as anybody. Just wait, though. The full contact boogie sports come out, basketball, football. Boy, I don't know. I just don't know.
Well,
especially with the outbreaks now, with Texas, and you're there in Dallas. Yeah. You guys are a hot spot. Yeah. I mean, I'm wearing a mask just doing this show because I'm on a microphone with you.
I don't get worried about it. Having said that, I'm very, very conscious of it, and I do wear a mask almost everywhere I go. My wife and I went to a friend's house who was moving, and last night we wore a mask. Now, you know, it's very hard to sip some wine while you're wearing a mask, so I'm not going to tell you that I had it on the entire time.
You got a straw.
But we did sit there and talk to one another, and everybody was, you know, on one part of this couch and over in this chair over here. So
yeah,
we stayed apart from everybody. Nobody shook hands. Matter of fact, I tried to elbow one friend of ours, and she goes, no, I'm not even doing that. I go, really? Elbow to elbow? That's it? And she goes, yeah, okay. And I'm okay with it. I mean, if that's where you want to go. But the thing is that once we opened up, this was going to happen. And I mean the whole country, but certainly in Texas or Florida, Arizona, California, other hot spots. Once you started getting people out and at restaurants and mingling and able to do whatever on Memorial Day weekend and everything, it was going to go up. I mean, it was inevitable. It was just a matter of when. And if you would have stayed back another couple of weeks, then it would have spiked and gone up in August or whenever. So yeah, I think we just have to kind of battle through it. And I hope everybody out there is conscious of it. Here's what got me, Frank, is a friend of ours has a store and a retail store. On the sign saying need to wear a mask, Dallas County has kind of issued that. As, I don't say kind of. They have issued, if you're out, you need to wear a mask, right? That's what the county commissioner is saying. And this woman came into the store without a mask, but just poked her head in to just tell her that I have to wear a mask. And the woman said, yes, you have to wear a mask if you come in. And she said, well, I'm not going to come in here anymore. And she had to be make her defiant things known that I'm not going to be working with. I'm not going to come in your store. I'm not going to participate in what, because I don't. But she had to make a point of saying, instead of just not doing it because she just didn't want to wear a mask, she had to make a point of saying it. And that's what is getting me. I'm like, come on, people. That we understand that this is supposed to help, and it's very, very confusing. We get that. But it's not really about your personal liberties, right? It's about the fact that you could give it to someone else. You could walk out of that store and give it to someone else. It's different than you're raising your ruckus to say, well, I want to make sure that I've got all the freedoms. Like, nobody's saying you don't have freedoms. It's just we're trying to be careful to get through this. So just a mask is not the worst thing in the world for a 5-minute period to go into store and order something or shop a little bit.
That's the arrogance of ignorance.
I guess.
It is.
Yeah,
it's just arrogance of ignorance. Just come on. The mask isn't for you. It's for other people. You know?
Yeah.
Or is it?
Yeah.
There have been a lot of studies. We won't go into this because I know we've got to take a break and bring Earl in. But a lot of studies have been done that the N95 mask, for instance, works a certain way, and it's not as effective as people had been led to believe. And it was said that the surgical masks aren't as effective as people are led to believe in regard to the COVID-19 outbreak. I think one comment was made, it's like trying to use a chain link fence to keep mosquitoes out.
Yeah.
So who knows? What the truth has to lie somewhere within all of this noise that we're hearing out there. And bottom line is, you know, just be smart. Don't be stupid. Be cognizant of the others around you and just be careful. Come on. You know, I don't sneeze on people when things were normal. and you go to sneeze, right. You know, you try to cover yourself or move or elbow it or whatever, or cough. I mean, I try to leave the room. So just do what you've done in the past and be smart. So there, whatever. Go play golf.
Yeah.
It's a great place
to go. I just think if people try to be a little bit more compassionate about it and not, again, the defiant, and I think a lot of it is based on who's telling them and who they believe and who they don't believe, and if it's coming from a government, and I don't like this governor, I like my mayor, or, okay, they're all trying. Let's be, you know, whoever, I don't care your political status or anything else, everybody's trying to get through this and have as few people catch it, as few deaths as you can. That's the goal for everybody. Nobody's out there promoting, let's get COVID. So whatever they're asking us to do, to some extent, okay, then let's give it a shot. Let's see what we can do so we can get to the point where they're hoping they have a vaccine, which I think, hopefully, is this fall. And it will probably give a lot of people a pause to say, okay, well, at least we can get a shot, you know, and that should help us, as opposed to now we kind of feel like we're just, you know, Tom Hanks in Castaway. You're just out in the water.
Hoping to find
dry land, you know? Yeah. So you mentioned Earl Forsey, and Earl's a good friend of ours who's the voice of PGA Tour Radio and does the play-by-play, doing the action at the Tournament of Champions. And so we're going to take a quick break here, and Earl will join us to talk. So many things that we'll get into with Earl Forsey out of Washington, D.C., which getting headlines of its own in a whole other world that Earl and Sher will be on top of and inform us a little bit about that. So let's take a quick timeout, and we'll be back with Earl Forsey. You're listening to Golf Talk America, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett joining you, and now we're joined by our good friend and featured man on this show quite often, and that, of course, is Earl Forsey with PGA Tour Radio, doing the play-by-play almost every week on the PGA Tour. And as everybody associated with the PGA Tour, had a little bit of a break for the previous 3 months or so, but back into action. And, of course, here to talk about the Travelers Championship and other things going on. Earl, thanks for being with us. How are you doing this morning?
Yeah, doing great. We're doing great. Hopefully you are, and everyone listening is doing good as well. And by the way, you forgot to mention, coming off the shockingly surprising cameo in the Maguire Sosa 30 for 30 a couple weeks ago. Did you guys see that?
No.
You see?
No. I haven't seen some of it, but what part are you talking about?
Check out my Twitter, at Earl Forsey, on Twitter. A week and a half ago, the Maguire Sosa 30 for 30 is on ESPN. And I'm not watching these things. I'll kind of catch them later, watch the, you know, the replay of it, maybe, you know, I've got a lot going on. Actually, I do. At this point, it's kind of busy now again. But I get a text that night. It was Sunday night. I get a text, like, with a picture. And it says, is this you? It sounds like you. Is this you? Is this really you? And I looked at it, and it took me a while, like 20 seconds. So I was like, yeah, I think it's in the studio, and it's the old radio station I used to work with here, the other sports station in town. And I responded, I said, where did you find this? And I get the text back. It was on ESPN. It's on the Maguire Sosa 30 for 30. Hmm. And I'm like, well, you know, that was 98. I was not at that station then. And he said, no, it was from, they were setting up like why it was a big, you know, why that was a big time for baseball to kind of bring baseball back, and they set it up by going through the lockout in 94. And I was like, yeah, well, that would be me. I was there then. So check out my Twitter. It was about 5 seconds of a cameo. They're setting up, you know, what happened before all this, before the home run chase. And it was the day that baseball was shut down. They're going through news reports and the most random thing ever, because we didn't have baseball back then. It was DC, you know, but it was just a report that I was going on the air that, you know, baseball struck out, the owners are locking. That was one of those things. And oh my God. I mean, first of all, 26 years ago,
did you look different?
Looking at it just a little bit, just a little bit. And thank goodness I've gotten better at what I do, number one. Secondly, I guess like a wine, I'm aging better. I was a little awkward back then, some big glasses and a big old shirt and Yeah. So I put it out. I was like, wow, didn't expect to make an appearance on the McGuire Sosa tonight.
We'll have to catch that. Yeah, that'll be good.
You know, and my point was, you know, in the end, 26 years later, I'm still talking about the same thing on my sportscast. Baseball labor strike, you know? I mean, it's crazy. But yeah, that was interesting. And I thought, first of all, it's such grainy video. It looks like it's, you know, from decades, well, I guess decades ago, I guess now. But, you know, it just looks so old, and it is, and it makes me realize how long I've been doing this and how old I am. But, yeah, I think I'm a little more happy with the place I am now than I was there. But that was, very interesting. So
Earl's going to have to get a SAG card now, Tim. Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, of all things, it just popped up. It's like, wow. And I wasn't watching. And I was thinking, too, it was like, if I'm watching it, I guess I would have realized, oh, my God, that's me. But it would have taken me a second because, it's a little different. Like I said, it was back in the blow dryer days. not that I just let it go all natural now and just let it fly. You know, I got the, you guys know. My thing is just.
Just
ponytails and
be free.
Ponytails and cocktails, basically. So
I agree with that now. 100%.
But yeah, that was interesting. It was interesting and quite embarrassing, actually, to be honest. But I guess it's a good thing because I've been doing this a while.
It's a good long career. That's what's neat about it, right? You never know.
Survival, man. It's survival. You know it. You know.
Yeah, Tim's been around a while.
It's survive and advance. It's like the NCAA tournament, and I guess I have. So,
Tim, do you ever see yourself on some old broadcasts and sports things that you've done and go cringe?
Actually,
go,
I mean, when Earl said that, same thing happened to me on the exam 30 for 30. Not that show, but another one that they did involving the Dallas High School kind of Friday Night Lights thing. And I was on there a few different times anchoring for, at that time, it was Channel 5 NBC. And they show you, and you're right, Earl. I mean, the whole big hair 80s Ron Burgundy look.
Yeah.
you can't flip it fast enough. You're like, no, that's not me. And they're like, oh, no, I got a screenshot. Here it is. And I'll send it to you, Frank. It'll be,
I got
to
see this.
Holy smokes. Yeah, what happened to that
guy? So check it out. I mean, I did like a 5-second snip. But, I finally got on ESPN, I guess. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
Yeah, that's good.
So back to the Travelers, Earl. We're talking about Mackenzie Hughes, obviously opening up with a very nice little 60, and a lot of guys going low. Before we had you on, we were talking about a lot of guys that were shooting 30s and 31s and 32s on different nines, and some of them combined it with another nine. Some of them, like Jordan Spieth, didn't do so well in the back nine. But boy, just some really low scores, and I guess this is expected here because this is where Furyk a few years ago hit 58. So there are bowls, there are fairways that are kind of cut so that if you get it on the right edge or left edge, it'll kind of bring it back into the middle of the fairway. There are a lot of different things that make for good golf. But is that, do you think? I'm curious because they're making it easier now, even because of people wanting to watch good golf and they haven't played in a while. So whether it's Colonial or RBC or now here. Or is that just golf in general now? We're just used to seeing guys. If you can't shoot a 63 or 4 in some round or almost all your rounds, then you're not going to be in the winner's circle.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of factors, okay? And this may be the only answer I give because it's going to take a while, but I usually do. Look, when you come back, I think a couple of weeks ago, I thought it was, set up. And the first 2 weeks we're talking about at Colonial and at Hilton Head, events that were in different places in the calendar. So it's different grasses, different conditions, et cetera, et cetera. And I think last week, just with all these courses have been in great shape, obviously. And I know the last 2 weeks, the first two events, those courses had been shut down. They were basically in pristine condition. And then you have no wind, basically. Very little in Texas and Fort Worth, and very little of it last week. And then last week, great golf course, great field, little wind, and they got rain a couple of nights, and then rain on Sunday. We know that. So it was just set up just for target golf for these guys. And I don't know, I'm not sure about how they, went into this with the setup and that type of thing, but I think more of it is just really great field, the best players in the game on these courses that were, you know, for the first 2 weeks, attackable in different places in the calendar. And that makes a huge difference. There's no doubt. I thought it made a difference last week with the wind. Certainly when you get the, you know, 2 months later in Hilton, usually, you know, the East Coast here, you know, when you get in the spring, that's when the winds whip up. That's when I used to play tennis, March and April, and you were always playing in wind. So that, and then you come to a course this week that's, you know, the course record's 58. So it's not like in the past, and this is in the same spot in the calendar. It's one of only two events that is going to be in the same date. The next one is coming up a little later, the 3M Open near Minneapolis. These are the only two of these, you know, rescheduled events at the end of the year that's in the original date it was intended. So, but this is a place normally you go to TPC River Highlands, it's set up, reachable par four. And, you know, they're just shooting the grass off, at least the top of the leaderboard. And look, this guy, but it's not everyone. Mackenzie Hughes shot 78 Sunday at Hilton Head. And shoot 60 yesterday. You know, I mean, it's just, it's what it is. I like it. This has always been a debate, right, in golf with purists and, you know, do you want to see guys score low or do you want to see them, you know, fight and struggle? No, I want to see them go low. I mean, I want to see the, you know, if I want to see struggling on the golf course, I'll just film myself. I mean, that's a game with which, I am familiar. I don't need to see that. I mean, I want to see the NBA. I want to see guys shoot threes and dunk in the NFL. I mean, you know, the rules have been adjusted there. So it's wide open passing game. That's great. I mean, it is what it is. I think most of it though is probably, just kind of where we are and with the fields and just the not the course setup, but the way things are set up here in the schedule for places that in the right conditions. And they were the first 2 weeks were very attackable, you know, not big, long monster golf courses. And this is what happens when you, and this is the benefit of having these great fields week after week after week, someone's going to go out and shoot low. And we had a bunch of guys do it yesterday. And I know it was McIlroy said yesterday after the round that he figured, you know, with the conditions, with the way it is. Well, it's Sergio. I'm sorry. Sergio, who played well yesterday and almost, you know, had a chance to win last week. He thinks that if the conditions kind of stay the way they are, the weather with what it's supposed to be, and there's a chance of rain, but that it's going to get firmer and faster as the week goes on, like most tournaments do. The rough this week, you know, is penalizing. It's significant. It has not been at all the first 2 weeks. That's going to be a factor for guys as the week goes on. But my goodness, yesterday we had eagles at both par fives. We had hole outs at least a couple of par fours for eagles. We had a hole in one yesterday. So it's the way this course is. At times guys get hot and they get on runs. You know, Kevin Stroman won this tournament with 7 straight birdies in a row coming in a few years ago. So this is not unusual for the Travelers Championship. And this course, and I think it's a lot of fun. Just put the best players out there. Go for it, guys. Just, you know, take the restrictor plates off. Let's see what you got. Let's see how low they can go.
Yeah. You know what? You mentioned Kevin Streelman winning this tournament several years ago.
Yeah.
The Monday after that tournament, when he ran off those 7 straight birdies, was the first day of Golf Talk America on PGAtour.com. And he was on the show with us. He came on the show that morning. So, yeah, he was our first guest on the first show, Tim. You weren't
Has he ever been back on the show?
He's been back on once. He was here in Nashville, and we were playing golf in Vince Gill's tournament in the Vinny. Mm-hmm. So he came on the show live there, but that's been about it. Yeah, that's been about it. Yeah. So what can I say?
Hey, we're joined by Earl Forsey with PGA Tour Radio. And Earl, a guy that's gotten a lot of attention, was getting it well before the break, but certainly coming out of the break and – for a new body that a lot of people maybe hadn't seen or is familiar with, of course, talking about Bryson DeChambeau, and who, by the way, the Redskins, I've got rumors that I think are true, are looking at him as a linebacker coming out of training camp, so we'll see what happens there. But you talk about a guy almost doing the opposite of David Duval's and John Daly's and others that we've seen that have been overweight and then tried to trim down. I don't know that we've ever seen a guy doing what he's doing, which is being
fairly trim and looking like a regular golfer to adding on 40 pounds of soul.
That's huge.
And now pounding that ball down fairways like you can't believe.
He's swinging out of his shoes, too.
Look, I've got this. I've got two teenagers. One just finished his freshman year. One's still in high school. But they're both workout guys, and especially the older one. And he's been doing it for a few years. And it really into the nutrition and the protein and the bulking up and the clean, you know, all this stuff. Okay, so I live this kind of thing, you know, with I hear it all the time. And if everybody's got different plans, and this is he's up 40 pounds from where he was 1 year ago. He put on 20 in late last year. You know, you remember he showed up, you know, it was President's Cup, I guess, right? When he showed up and that was just a short break. And it was like, wow, he's changed. And that was then he had kind of started to do that. Right. And then in the off season, and then you show up this year, and then he's got 3 months off. Well, what am I going to do? I mean, he's got his plan. He shows up and it's 20 pounds more. But, you know, his thing is he's not doing it just because he thinks it's the right thing. Right? He's got it all figured out. I mean, and look at these guys. When Rory McIlroy sits there and talks about, he can't believe how far the guy's hitting it. That's Rory McIlroy talking. You know, it's a guy that can hit it 350 with regularity. You know, Phil, you know, this week, you know, that talking about the nasty tee shot. He hit that, you know, he went for that green at 17 in the practice round.
Yeah.
He said he's not going to do it during the tournament because there's just not enough reward to the risk. But he did it. I'm just wondering one day if he's going to be the guy that drives the par 5 green at Bay Hill. You know, that fish hook around. Anyway, but it was, what would they measure? 200 mile an hour ball speed and a 365 carry.
It's crazy.
Was what it was.
Yeah, crazy.
But the thing is, he's not. And that measurement, the degree off of square was 0.5%. See, that's the thing.
Yeah.
And that's always been the thing key in golf. You're going to gain distance, lose accuracy. Whatever he does, guys, he's got it figured out. And look, good for him, because he was raised a lot of eyebrows with his approach to the game. We know that when he came on, but and had the credentials coming onto the PGA Tour. It's not like he was just a no name, nobody, you know, nothing guy coming on and just kind of out of nowhere. But that raised a lot of eyebrows for people, the purists and the classic, you know, golf fans and golf instructors, everything, pros, that, yeah, well, that's a good plan. Let's see if you can do it. And guess what? He's done it. He's become one of the top players in the game. And it's not just he has good weeks. Guys, he's doing this every week. And that was the thing. Yeah. You can do it, maybe win once or twice. You can't do it consistently. He is. And there is no doubt. We know when you're playing from a lot further in, it's a big advantage. And he's playing from second shots because of that, from a lot further in, and doing it from the fairway for the most part. And he's unlocked the secret somewhere. And sports and pro sports is, you know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. And there's a lot of guys looking at that thinking, he's got something here. I just wonder what the trickle down effect is. I think it's fantastic. I think it's great for him because he's a guy that's always been told, basically, whether it's to his face or in the periphery, in the media and everything, you can't do that. You can't do it that way. It's not going to work. Well, he's the one laughing. I mean, he's, you know, the incredible bulk there, and it's kind of fun to watch. And I think it's great because it's a guy that has always been swimming upstream on this stuff. And he's unlocked some secrets, and he's doing it his way, and it's working.
Well, Tim, you have inside knowledge of Bryson DeChambeau through his career at SMU.
Yeah, he was obviously a very good golfer at SMU when he was here and won the U.S. Amateur, and a really, really nice guy. Even back then, I think that's where he kind of started the Payne Stewart hat, if you will. Although I think he did it more for Ben Hogan reasons, but, you know, has a unique look about him. And because of the hat, that really was kind of all it was. Very good golfer, but looked a little different because of that. And actually, we've had Art Selinger on here a number of times, long drive champion for years and years, Frank. And that's a guy and a sport that actually Bryson embraced. He went and talked to a number of long drive competitors. And what's their key? Why is their clubhead speed so much more than a PGA Tour? We look at Rory and Dustin Johnson. These guys are cranking the ball out. And they're swinging as hard as you think they can swing. And yet their speed of 122, 124 miles an hour compared to the long drive guys, which are pushing 150 mile an hour swing speed. And he was like, well, there's more in there. There's more speed that I can get. And a lot of it was the bulk up part, which is, makes them look a lot like the long drive guys. The difference is, as you said, Earl, is that he's got to hit fairways. Those guys have to hit one big fairway, one out of 10 swings, and they're good to go. He can't do that and make a living at it. He's figured out how to swing so hard and get the speed up so that the ball is cranked and hit it dead center. The long drive guys have done an awful lot to help him figure this one out. And that's the part I'm wondering about. Will guys start imitating that?
Well, it's tough. I mean, sometimes you can't. I mean, you can try to do what LeBron does or what Brady does, but only certain guys can do it, right? And here's another thing. Yeah. I brought this up a couple weeks ago as we restarted. To remember, one of the other things with him, with the, all the clubs the same, his unique swing style and everything else. Remember, it was the bunker play when he came on the PGA Tour. It's like, well, he's, you know, it's because he does it his way and that one way. It's kind of a hindrance for him when he's in the sand. His sand saves. He's top 10. And sand saves for the season on the PGA Tour. So he's improved that too. What, you know, that's the thing. He's, the dude's got the right stuff. I mean, as far as doing that, and it's not a game. It's where you can win every week. We know that, but this is just the beginning for this thing. So this is the new look. It's going to be interesting to see him as he takes this, you know, moving forward, if he can keep it up, because if he does, you know what, you can't win every week, but if you put yourself in the mix every week, you've got a lot better chance to win. And he's kind of doing that each and every week now. And he started well yesterday.
Well, he's the opposite of Gary Woodland, because Gary Woodland went on a program to lose weight and take bulk away, and it improved Gary. So what works for one doesn't work for another. It's just when you find that secret, and maybe it's not in the dirt, it's in the gym, you know?
I'm actually excited to see Ricky Fowler 40 pounds heavier.
That's what I want to
see.
Big
bulky Ricky Fowler.
No.
40 pounds of him would be, he'd get up to about what, 160 if he gained 40 pounds? So, yeah, I don't know. If you got the game, you got the game. The funny thing about him, though, and we can move on to something else, but is that Bryson had a kind of a world-class game. Again, U.S. amateur champion and NCAA champion and one on the PGA. He had game. It wasn't like, hey, I need to do something to hang on the tour, to even get on the tour, something drastic. He had the game, and he did something so drastic that everybody's like, wow, why would you mess with a Ryder Cup-level player? That's where his genius, his uniqueness is that he's like, I'm a scientist. I'm constantly tinkering, and he is. And I don't know what's coming next for him, but I can't wait. It's always exciting.
It is, and it's great to talk about because it flies in the face of convention, doesn't it? And it's a sport where, you know, when Tiger started bulking up and getting stronger, a lot of people thought, well, you know, it's going to hinder him a little, you know, and there was some case to be made that, you know, well, with the injuries and everything, that maybe it was too much, whatever. But again, it flies in the face of convention in golf where you can get too bulky. You can get well, he's pretty big dude now. He always was a big guy. I mean, he's not, you know, but he's, you know, he looks like you said, looks like he's, you know, walking in ready to play a football game rather than, you know, play golf. Yeah. And it's certainly not hindered him. I mean, and it's interesting to talk about and watch because it just, it again, just goes against what a lot of people believe. And like you said, he's got a plan. And, you know, analytics are so big in all these sports now. They have been for a while, but everybody's embracing him. And you know what? They're probably a happy medium. I'm a big believer. It's not just analytics. It's not just, you know, kind of gut feel or whatever. The truth always lies somewhere in between. And for him, he's got the right mix now. And again, a player, like you said, that had, you know, all the credentials in the world. And not that all these guys don't try to get better, because in sports, like anything, if you're not trying to get better, you're losing ground. But he has taken, like you said, a world-class, you know, world-class credentials and gotten better and just keeps doing it and is not happy with where he is. It's always, what can I get out of it? And so many guys, especially in the game of golf, it's such a fine line between being great and being okay. And he's not afraid. Some guys, if I were me, if I were playing really well, I'd be afraid to mess with it. You know, I mean, it's got don't fix what ain't broke. But he's messing with it. He's good. He's winning. I'm going to get better. I mean, then that's something a lot of guys aren't willing to do. And he's doing it, and it's working.
We're joined by Earl Forsey with PGA Tour Radio and talk about Bryson DeChambeau. Okay, let's. We've talked a little bit of golf, Earl. How about your beloved baseball and your Nats? Baseball coming back, not coming back.
Well,
A, have you missed baseball? And B, are we going to see it back? They act like they are, but they've gone up and down, back and forth.
There's no spitting in baseball.
With baseball.
Okay. There's no spitting in baseball, boys.
My station in D.C., the fan in D.C., we're the Nat station, so I'm loyal to that. My beloved sport is NFL football. So I'm still I like baseball. I what is beloved to me is winning championships, and it was nice to see, you know, the Nats win one last year and haven't got to celebrate that yet. I mean, that's kind of a topic that's been in D.C. here that – it's because of the, you know, strangeness, the weirdness of what's going on. And it's still going to be unusual because now they're playing 60 games and the season starts in July. And it's, you know what? It's unfortunate because we had, and you guys know, and in all these sports you see, but DC, it's been a while. You know, I'm a Redskins guy. That's 91. That's 29 years ago when Gibbs teams were winning every other year almost. And this has always been a Redskins town. But the Caps winning, you know, 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, that was such a big deal. And you guys know what happened with Ovechkin and all these players just partying it up for 2 weeks basically in D.C. And they became they are legends in this town because of that. And they are legends because they won a Stanley Cup, which DC never thought they would have. And so those guys kind of have achieved John Riggins like legendary status in DC. But, you know, the Nats doing it, that was kind of the beloved, you know, that's team nobody's thinking about and, you know, playing Baby Shark and the little team that could, and they did it. And it was weird because in the end, and what happened with the Astros and the scandal we found out about later and the stealing of signs and everything. The Nationals kind of became, for baseball fans, I think, as the playoffs went on, kind of the team everybody was rooting for, you know, at least most people. And that they've always been, they've been for a while, Bryce Harper and all that stuff. It kind of been a hated team. Like, it's because they're not the Cardinals. They're not one of these, you know, franchises that dates back to the 1930s. They're kind of the new kids on the block. So that's kind of the thing around here is what it's going to be. There's no fans. So they're still not going to be. I mean, they had a parade, but we won't. In D.C., they're never going to. We're never going to have that moment where the fans are. Well, they'll eventually have it, but it's going to be so after the fact. You know, you're not going to have that opening day. Here's the World Series banner. Everybody cheer. It's just that's the weirdness of it for the perspective where I'm in. But I tell you, it's just nice to have sports back. I don't mind 60 games. You know, I mean, whatever it is. I mean, and hopefully they get to play. Gentlemen, we don't know still. We don't know about baseball. The NBA is still a month away from playing. The NHL still, you know, in these times, it's like dog years, right? Where really these months, because a week is like a month. A week is like 2 months, you know, 3 months. How much has happened in 3 months? And I'll go back to early March when we were at TPC Sawgrass. What happened in a span of 24 hours, going from Wednesday, everything on track, everything's normal, to Thursday night being shut down, everything for 3 months, right? That happened in 24 hours in all sports. So a month is a long time. And the NFL is a month and a half away. And I just, the plans you make today are completely different from what takes place tomorrow.
It certainly, you know, seems, Earl.
Fingers crossed that all this actually goes off as is planned in all sports.
Yeah. It certainly seems from that day we were at Sawgrass, that Thursday when it was shut down that night, Wednesday night when the text came out at 10:45, it seems like it's been a year. These months have gone by so painfully slow.
Yeah.
It's brutal. I can understand why people want to get out and do things. Just do it carefully and smart.
And we're still working, you know, and locally, remotely, all our shows, and it's going to be like that for at least a couple of more months. Here's the thing, though. my kids would always tell me, they know what I do, and they don't pay, you know, the kind of casual sports fans and everything. My oldest one's a huge baseball fan, and we get onto that. I know we've been gone too long, but when I told him about all the rules changes, what they're going to do in baseball, he's like, oh my God, what are they doing?
They've ruined the game.
Runner on second. It's like, you know, boys club.
Runner on second.
What are they doing?
Speak to that for a minute for some of our listeners that may not know. I don't know why they wouldn't, but may not know what you're talking about with the runner on second base.
Yeah, well, first of all, we need to talk about the pitching changes that was taking effect, where relievers have to stay in for three batters now and all that. That was the rule put in before this whole thing happened. So part of the protocol and these things to get things moving again is they don't want to play 18-inning games. So they're going to try to have a winner for extra inning games, they're doing, and this has been done in the minor leagues, some of the minor leagues, lower ones, for a couple of years now, this whole idea of putting a runner on second. You start the extra innings with a runner on second, and it gives you more chance of getting a guy in and pushing a run across to end the game in 10 or 11, not 18 or 19. Interesting. The other concept was they were thinking about just having tie games, like they do in spring training and stuff like that. And it's funny, and my oldest is, of all the sports, he's more of a baseball guy because he grew up, played a lot of baseball and travel baseball and stuff like that. And when I brought up they were going to have tie games possibly, he's like, oh, that would have been better. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, it's better than having a guy. So that's one of the things they're going to do. Obviously, they're going to have a DH now in the National League as well. Pitchers aren't going to hit anymore for this year.
Right.
But that looks like that's something the players have been pushing for and a lot of folks around baseball for a while, and my guess. And it's not now official. It could have been had they come up with come to terms with the MLBPA on an agreement, but it looks like that DH is going to be semi-permanent in baseball, and that might be here to stay for that. And the rules tweaks, but they've been doing that for a while now, and we'll see how that works. You know, but here's one of the other outlying things, which would have been interesting. I'm not have, you know, legit it would have been. Was have three guys go up and hit home runs, have a home run derby to end the game, like a shootout in hockey. But you know what? People thought shootouts in hockey was kind of weird when it happened. And now that's the norm because that's what they did to try to keep games from going 3.5 hours. That's not going to happen when they get to the playoffs. All this is the regular season games for the runner on second and everything. Playoffs are going to be normal. You just keep playing it till someone wins. But yeah, it's interesting. You know, people get over it. And you know what? Maybe they'll watch and say, yeah, that's not bad. I mean, they're trying something. They've got to not have these games because they're going to have to play 60 games in 60 days, basically, whatever, 65 days.
That's
it's a tight schedule. Yeah.
That's a lot. I'd love a home run derby. I think that's a great idea.
It would have been weird. It would have been, you know, not very traditional, but it would have been interesting, right? I mean, so they were floating a lot of ideas. There were some, you know, crazy ideas. And we don't know in baseball sense, we don't know still. It's plan is for home stadiums. We're not sure. There's a couple teams already that have looked into other options about fallback options for where to play if their home stadiums things, you know, get bad again. They can't play in their home stadiums.
Right.
And I heard one of the reports was Toronto Blue Jays in particular, who have been hit by some positive tests. Buffalo is one of the fallbacks for them. There may be baseball in Buffalo this year. We don't know, guys. I mean, we don't know. We don't really know. And boy, it's a month away, but that is a long time. We'll see what happens over the next few weeks. The players are going to start coming back and start working out at the end of next week. So that's kind of the first sign, I guess, and you know, and hopefully things stay, you know, on track here on the PGA Tour as well, because at least, you know, everyone is embracing the new thing with that. I mean, you know, look, I talked about those baseball rules. We've had no fans for 3 weeks, and hopefully in a few weeks that changes as well. But I was thinking yesterday, kind of gotten used to it now, right? For 2-3 weeks later, yeah, it's kind of, you know, it was a little strange the first week, and I know it's still different for the players, especially on Sunday, but you kind of got used to that, right? Didn't take long.
I think Hilton Head was kind of fun because you had everyone sitting on their patios watching the tournament. That was, and some guy screaming the whole time at everybody.
Yeah,
he was trying to bring back all the stuff that none of us like about some of the fans, like Uta Man. And
I think they're calling a marshal on him, didn't they? Did a couple of the players try to get?
I think so. Yeah.
I don't know how you marshal somebody on his own property.
Not easy.
Because he was being a distraction. Yeah, it was. Hey, Earl, before we let you go. You know, you're a busy guy. The last thing I want to say, and this is completely outside of the sports, but it's just curious because I don't know how this is all playing out. There is talk, there's something in D.C. about D.C. becoming a state instead of it being a district, if you will. Why? What would happen there? And I'm just curious about that for people who don't know about it. What benefit would it be for living in D.C.? Are you for it? Or are you against it? Does it matter?
Well, it's not for me to say because I'm not a resident of the District of Columbia. I don't live inside the city. That has been a raging, and a hot topic debate in D.C., mayoral races and for years. Because it's basically the point is it's a city that has no state. It is a federal city. So a lot of it is run. Many parts of the city are federal property. Okay. Places around the buildings, the Senate, the Capitol, the White House, those type of monuments. So it's an interesting mix because there is a city government. There's a mayor and there's a city government in D.C. and council people that run the city. But it's done a lot with the federal involvement as well, the federal government. So, and again, I shouldn't speak too much on it because I don't know a lot about it. It's not my municipality. It's not my local. But that has been an issue for decades, as long as I can remember, probably as long as I've been alive, which is a long time, that they've always been pushing for statehood. Because it's a city, in essence, and the license plates say it, taxation without representation is what their point is. That they're a city in the United States that doesn't have representatives in the federal government. Now, they have what they call shadow senators, and this was something that came up, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago now, that at least they have representatives in Congress, in the Senate, that represent the city and have a voice in the discussions and the politics of it, but they don't have votes in the end and into laws or whatever. So that's really been the push for a while. It's a hot button topic because, like everything else, but it's always been that way in DC that some think it's good because now there are some those that want statehood would be opposed to it, but there are some benefits to having the federal involvement in the city as well, because the government takes care of a lot of that property at their cost, not cost to the local government. And when you're talking about snow removal and all this stuff, the things that are just involved in infrastructure, certain roads and everything else, so they get some federal benefit because of that. But in the end, it's the people that live in the city, and there's more and more every day. The city, it's really the demographics and the dynamics of DC have changed so much in the last 10 to 15 years. There's been a big push in the last decade for people to move back inside the city borders. They've put up a lot of condominiums, a lot of housing, a lot of apartments. There's been an explosion of that. DC was always a government city. People go into DC to work, federal government, 9 to 5, and then, leave the city. And by 7 o'clock, there was no one down there. And in the areas where the federal areas and the buildings, the office buildings and everything, that's changed now. And I've talked to you about our local radio station. The Fan is right 2 blocks away from Nats Park. And that's all. I mean, we're surrounded by new apartment buildings, restaurants, bars, places to go. People live down there. And that is really in my lifetime, really a big change that's happened in the last decade or so. And I think that's probably leading now to more of the real push towards statehood for DC to become a 51st state. And I don't take a side in either way, just because I think there's more people living down there now and, they're for it. So we'll see.
Well, you're right. You mentioned taxation without representation. And let me give you this to chew on, boys. How would you like to live in Davidson County, Tennessee, where we have taxation with very poor representation based on the fact that our government, the county government, Metro Nashville, just passed and is imposing a 34% property tax increase. 34%. Hello, folks. Pandemic, wow. Economic stress, earthquakes, bugs, killer hornets, whatever, and 34% property tax increase. Merry Christmas from your local government, Nashville, Tennessee. Can you believe that?
Well, everybody's got their issues, don't they? Well, Earl, we do appreciate your insight in everything, whether it's politics or golf or baseball or football, whatever. So
I never expected to talk about that at the end. I hope I didn't, you know.
I know.
No, I hope good. I gave somebody, you know, I try to, look, I do sports. I skip my job and I do sports, but I, you know, I'm a longtime resident of the D.C. metro area. My wife hates it when I say I'm from Washington, D.C. when I go places. You're not from D.C. You know, that's another debate for another time. But no, I try to stay out of that stuff, and I just, you know, read scores. but it's an interesting topic. I pay attention to all that stuff just because that's what I do.
And you give great commentary and insight on PGA Tour Radio, and you'll be doing the play-by-play again today, as always.
Looking forward to it.
So, what time does it start today on SiriusXM?
We get underway at noon, so get ready to get started here soon, and you know, hopefully somebody will be chasing a low number again today and this weekend. I'm guessing someone at least.
We'll be listening, and I apologize for texting you right in the middle of your broadcast yesterday. I typed it in, and I was going to hit send after you went off the air, and for some reason, my thumb went erratic and hit it, so I apologize for interrupting.
That's all right.
It's your thumb's fault. It's not your fault.
It's my thumb. Well,
that'll happen to me, though, sometimes. I get family texts, you know, and it's at 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't respond till 7.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, we're
I was on the air, and kids, you know?
I know it's the 5 seconds to look at your text, but 5 seconds is a lot.
Yeah, it is. When you're on the air talking.
You know, during the breaks, and it's, so it was okay. I'm glad I spent a little time, my goodness, a lot of time with you today. So
yeah, it was great, as always, man. We love having you, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, guys,
thanks,
stay safe.
Take care, and have a great weekend. Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
We'll be listening.
Okay.
See you, Earl.
Yep, bye.
Earl Forsey, again, PGA Tour Radio. Listen to him pretty much every tournament. He's doing the play-by-play, and as long as they keep doing the tournaments and they're back in action, he's there for you. So and does a great job with all the different broadcasters on PGA Tour Radio. Hey, Frank, have you been we're talking here, and this is, again, Friday that we're taping this for our podcast, and the Travelers Championship is well underway in the second round. Jordan Spieth has had a bit of an up-and-down round, didn't do well in the front nine, and now it's kind of gotten a couple birdies back, but still, considering that the opening leaderboard was 10 under, and now he's struggling at
5,
1 to 2 under, somewhere in there, it's the cut line's going to be pretty high, so we'll see how he does, but some guys back out there. I'll tell you what, though, we're talking about Bryson DeChambeau, you watch the way these courses are set up, Frank, and we've talked about this before, and that's where I bring them up again, But Art Selinger says that people want to say, okay, we can't keep making 8,000 yard hole of golf courses and 520 yard par fours and everything. He goes, just raise the rough a little bit, raise the fairways because they become a bowling alley. And I'm watching some of these guys hit
and
shots.
Tighten them up,
Frank.
Tighten them up a little bit.
Can hit these low screamers.
Yep.
And that ball rolls out 60, 70 yards
forever,
almost every time. Yeah.
Stinger.
So
that's
you get a little bit of carry at 260. Yeah, you just get to carry a 260, 270. You're hitting a 325, 330 yard shot because it rolls so far. So, yeah, and this course is set up for that. I mean, it's seriously is a runway on some of these holes for these guys that aren't normally considered long drivers. Ball's going forever.
Yeah, like Kapalua. They do that at Kapalua, too. So,
right.
You get these 400 yard drives that are just ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, downhill, right? Yeah. On a pavement. Going, you know, I'd like to get my average up there too. I could hit a couple of 300 plus when you're doing it there. So anyway,
I'd like to get my handicap.
Looks like they have beautiful weather. Get my handicap so you can win some bets.
So you're playing this weekend at a club court property?
I don't know. I don't know. If it, yeah, Preston Wood. I might be able to get out there and play. Weather's supposed to be pretty good, I think. It's actually cooled off around here. We're barely scraping 90, so I don't know what that's about. I think it's a precursor for heat yet to come, I guess, in July and August. But
the Sahara.
I'm going to try to.
Sand, the sandstorm that's coming upon us.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I read something about that.
We'll have it here in Nashville tonight, tomorrow. Yeah.
Oh,
it's on its way.
So it's already like in Florida and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just what 2020 is the gift that keeps on giving. It's just every day there's something. What next? I don't want to know. Something. By the way, just to leave it at this, what happened to the murder hornets? Remember that?
Yes.
Murder hornets.
I do remember.
What happened?
And as it turned out, I think the last thing I saw was, and this will come as a shock, that they were greatly exaggerated by being called the murder hornets by the media.
You're
to
kidding.
Try to scare people. That would never happen on any subject. And apparently they're not quite that bad. They're hornets, but they're not. And they had videos that showed them stinging a mouse or whatever and killing a mouse. And that got eight million different views and started scaring people. And I think the truth is that it was not that big a deal. Yes,
The murder hornets. What happened is Bass Pro Shops stopped selling AR-15, so the murder hornets couldn't purchase weapons or ammo. It never ceases to amaze me how the media can just go. I won't say what I want to say, but you know how they do.
I'm with you on it. It's like they create the panic that they can then use as content for the next 2 weeks, right? And
sure.
or longer. Or even just for tomorrow. Just, here's our dramatic story. And I've said that about the COVID, and not to diminish it or anything else, but we don't hear about how many people in the PGA Tour don't have it. We hear about one or two or three that get it, and that becomes the headline. And you're like, okay, and that's not good, and you want them to get better and everything else, but it's still showing that not many people are getting it. But that doesn't sell papers, right? It doesn't make you watch the news and watch TV if you say, hey, PGA Tour, almost everybody, 99.3%, are all fine. You go, oh, okay, thanks.
That doesn't
I've said about my problem with meteorologist. Yeah, my meteorologist issue.
Oh, you hate weather
people.
It could
be
hot
and sunny for the next 2 weeks, but somehow they got to tell you about a Sahara desert storm coming. They got to throw some drama in there to make you watch.
Oh,
right? And that's weather, and it's not like usually life and death, but that's weather. It translates into everything we watch now is so dramatic headlines to get you, and you read the story or watch it, and you're like, well, it's not even that big a deal. But they try to suck you in. So,
well, I'm playing this afternoon. So
frustrating.
Then showering and having dinner at Bluegrass Yacht and Country Club, a Club Corp member property. And we just want to shout out to Club Corp and thank them for their great sponsorship of this show. We appreciate it very much. If you have an opportunity, check out clubcorp.com. You can become a member for a day, as you've said many times, Tim, and they'll let you play the course, have lunch or dinner or whatever, and check out their facilities. If you're a member of one, you can play and dine and take in the amenities at every Club Corp property across the world. So there you go.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
It's a great deal. Clubcorp.com. That's your website. Yeah, be able to check them out. So, hey, what's the music's playing.
Well, we should stop the music.
I'm out of here. Okay.
Stop the music.
No.
Stop the music.
It's not a big deal.
What were you going to say?
Nothing. Just we're going to talk with Brendan Sweeney next week.
Yes, we are.
I just wanted to get the update on what's going on with
He's at French Lick as we speak.
We'll
he
that.
Is on property at French Lick. So we'll get him live from French Lick next week.
Good. One of our favorite places. Okay. Yeah. That's all I wanted to say. Hey, we're out of time. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Thank you to Earl Forsey with PGA Tour Radio. And thank you all for listening to us and downloading our podcasts all over the world, actually. And we love that each and every one of you does that every time we're on. That's what we do it for, is all of you. So thanks so much for doing that. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks again for joining us. And remember to join us next time right here on Golf Talk America. Okay.